So, friendship. If you had a chance to be discussing some of the ideas before the service, you won't be surprised to know about this. But we found a poem by Stuart Henderson that has some things about being friends that we could relate to when we heard it. Maybe you will too. Loveness is going to read it to us.
Old friends, on an ordinary jungle day, a funny thing took place. A meeting of such opposites in a hollow hemmed in space. In the old trunk of a ringwood tree, a gorilla of some size saw a caterpillar on his nose when he crossed his eyes. The gorilla's name was Beanbag, the caterpillar, York, and with introductions over, they then began to talk about themselves and books they had written on quiet evenings in, but sadly never published, as the plots were somewhat thin. They talked of hopes not happened, of living different days, of perhaps exotic travels to Walton on the Naze. They talked of swapping places and wondered if they had dare. York got quite excited at the thought of having fair. Then you could crawl in places that you have never seen before, and I could yawn and show my teeth and beat my chest and roar. They talked of times that troubled, of things that sometimes died, of often being frightened and being forced to hide, and the silence of a sunset, how dozen came in twelves, and through speaking to each other, they learned more about themselves.
We looked at where there are stories that involve friendship in the Bible. Here a selection.
Ruth chapter 1, verses 16 to 17. Ruth said, "Do not urge me to turn back and abandon you. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you stop, I will stop. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die and be buried. In God's name, I swear that not even death will part me from you." What kind of friend are you? Are you the sort that can be depended upon in a crisis, or the person that vanishes the moment there is a suggestion the commitment might cost you something? Naturally, we all like to think we are the former, true, loyal, trustworthy. But ask yourself honestly, how many people are there you would be willing to make sacrifices for? For the Christian, not only should friendship possess a special quality, but the very concept of friendship has been widened by Jesus to include those both far and near, those we are close to, and those who will always be strangers. To demonstrate such friendship is hard indeed, and few will ever get near it. But in the reading, we are reminded of the devotion of Ruth, who centuries before Christ showed herself to be a friend in need. What is God saying to you about your service to others through her example? The second reading on friendship comes from 1 Samuel chapter 18. Verses 1 to 3 and verse 4, the friendship of David and Jonathan. When David had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was bound to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David, because he loved him as his own soul. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that he was wearing and gave it to David, and his armor, and even his sword, and his bow, and his belt. From David and Jonathan, despite their differences, we learn the spirituality of friendship. Key to their relationship was seeing what God saw in each other, men after God's own heart. Each saw the other as a warrior and a man of faith who served the living God. And their relationship, sealed in a covenant, provided each of them with God-given courage, strength, and faithful love. Though their lives were threatened by their loyalty to each other, they loved the other as they loved themselves.
The story of Job in the Old Testament is of a man whose faith was tested to the absolute extreme. He was a very wealthy man, very prosperous, and everything had gone well for him in his life. But the time came when everything went wrong. He lost his flocks and herds, hundreds and thousands of oxen, donkeys, sheep, camels, the lot. And then his 10 children were all killed in a freak accident. Finally, Job was afflicted with sores from top to toe. He sat in a pile of ashes, scraping his skin with broken pieces of pottery. He still had his wife, but she wasn't much help. She thought he'd be better off dead and abandoning his faith altogether. The Bible describes what happened next. When Job's three friends, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite, heard about all the troubles that had come to him, they set out from their homes, met together by agreement to go and sympathize with him and comfort him. When they saw him from a distance, they could hardly recognize him. They began to weep aloud, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and 7 nights. No one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. What can you do for a friend who is going through extreme, intense suffering? What can you say to them? Have you ever been in such a position, or have you been the one who needed the comfort? Well, you can choose to go and visit. Maybe in such extreme circumstances you might be rather afraid to visit, afraid of how you'll react, afraid of saying or doing the wrong thing. Maybe, like Job's friends, they could say, "Let's go together." So you arrange a time to go with one or two other people because there's more strength in numbers. You most likely will be moved to tears and weep with and for the suffering friend. Perhaps best of all, you can sit with them in silence. What happened when the friends broke the silence is another story, but at least at the beginning, they surely communicated true friendship and I think we can learn something from their example.
So we're now at the second section of our service, which is a little bit different, but maybe you'll see that it fits in. Smiles and laughter. There are lots of smiles and laughter when our group meets, and you probably share smiles and laughter when you're with friends. But it's not something we felt is often talked about in worship. And we wondered, did Jesus have a sense of humour? We're now going to have a Bible reading and then a sketch that's been written by John Bell and Graham Maul about a conversation between Jesus and Peter.
It's Matthew 17, verse 24 to 27, payment of the temple tax. When Jesus and his disciples came to Capernaum, the collectors of the temple tax came to Peter and asked, "Does your teacher pay the temple tax?" "Of course," Peter answered. When Peter went into the house, Jesus spoke up first. "Simon, what is your opinion? Who pays duties or taxes to the kings of this world? The citizens of the country or the foreigners?" "The foreigners," answered Peter. "Well then," replied Jesus, "that means that the citizens don't have to pay. But we don't want to offend these people. So go to the lake and drop in a line. Pull up the first fish you hook, and in its mouth you will find a coin worth enough for my temple tax and yours. Take it, and pay them our taxes."
Jesus?
Yes, Peter.
I think there's a problem.
Yes, Peter?
It's a problem about money.
I see. So what's the problem?
We don't have any.
But that's nothing new, Peter.
No, Jesus. Jesus?
Yes, Peter?
What do you think about taxes?
I've never been in one, Peter.
No, not taxes, taxes.
Well, what do you think about them?
I worry we don't have any money to pay them. That's the problem. We're going to Capernaum. When we get there, they'll ask us to pay taxes. And that means money. And we don't have any.
And that's nothing new, Peter.
No, Jesus. Jesus?
Yes, Peter?
What are you going to do then?
What am I going to do then? You mean, what are you going to do then?
Yes, I mean, what are you going to do then? I mean, what am I going to do then?
You're going to stop worrying and start fishing.
Fishing?
That's right. You're going to take a line and throw it into the lake, and when you pull it out, you find you've caught a big fish with a silver coin in its mouth.
Jesus, I've heard of gold fillings, but this is ridiculous. How could a fish have a silver coin in its mouth?
Oh, it'll get one when you take it to the market. It's amazing how much some folk will give for a £5 salmon.
Oh, I see.
Had you not thought of that?
No, Jesus, I didn't think.
But that's nothing new, Peter.
No, Jesus.
So now the last part of our service, friends with Jesus. Being friends with Jesus, what might that be like? Two short Bible readings and a comment.
The first Bible reading is taken from John 15, verses 12 to 15. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. "Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose and appointed you, so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Love each other." And the second reading is taken from Luke 10, verses 38 and 39. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. And she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said.
Jesus had friends. I think we probably all know that. In his humanity, just like you and me, he needed and valued friends. Friendship was very, very important to him. And that means that friendship is very important to God. Jesus chose his friends. And as time went on and he got to know each other better and better, he shared everything with these friends and disciples, and he treated them as true friends, not simply as followers and devotees, despite how they sometimes treated him or responded to him. And that friendship between Jesus and his disciples was created to blossom and grow even after his death and resurrection. But what about Martha, Mary, and Lazarus? They were outside the 12 chosen disciples. Jesus visited many homes, and often, on those occasions, there were challenges and tensions. There were certain people watching his every move and listening critically to everything he said. It would have been anything but relaxing on many of those occasions. So can you imagine what it meant to Jesus that Martha opened her home to him? I love that sentence. She opened her home to him. Has anyone ever opened their home to you during your life, as a child or any time? When we left Blackpool to move to Leicester in 2012, I had one of the best gifts that I've ever had in my life. A friend gave me a shiny new key to her front door. Symbolic, of course, because we were moving. And anyway, she always had her door open. But it was a wonderful thing to receive, to know I could go there any time, open the door, and there was a welcome. In effect, that's what Martha gave to Jesus. He could drop into Martha's place any time, kick off his sandals, and just be himself. My imagination runs a bit wild at this point. I imagine Martha and Mary vying with each other to bring water for him to wash his feet. "I'll get it. No, I'll get it. No, you go and put the kettle on." They didn't have kettles, but whatever it was. And I imagine Lazarus sitting with a huge beam on his face. There would surely be lots of laughter. Jesus loved these friends, and no wonder. Jesus still needs and wants friends who open their homes to him and their lives to him. The New Living Translation puts Revelation 3 verse 20 like this. "Look, I stand at the door and knock. If you hear my voice and open the door, I will come in and we will share a meal together as friends." I recently read a quote from a young mother who said, "At one stage in my life, the idea that Jesus is always with me terrified me, as if he was waiting to catch me out. But now, the awareness that Jesus is always with me, not to punish or chastise me, but to share in my happiness and sadness like a best friend brings me nothing but comfort. This same Jesus, who spent time at Martha's place with Mary and Lazarus, is the same Jesus who needs our friendship today and who offers his friendship to us, a friendship that will last forever.